morning, football fans. Well, it's back, and ain't that a good thing? And we have had already six great games of football with three more beauties to come. What a season in the offing. As I welcome my co-host, Adam Cooney, former Bomber, former Bulldog, two out of two there. Coons, what a great start to the season. The Demons knock off the Hoodoo. The Bombers put bad memories behind them. Brisbane and Port do the upsets for an amazing Saturday of football. What a great day of footy we had yesterday.
Who would have thought? How's your tips going so far, Finey? Mine are not great.
I've been tipped out.
Yeah, I did tip the Bombers yesterday, but got nowhere near it in the other games. Who would have thought?
Actually, now, interestingly, this is... I've just worked something out. You see, I didn't get on in time, so my official tips are going terribly, but I get all the away teams.
Oh, there you go.
I get Port Adelaide.
You get the D's.
I get Melbourne. I get Brisbane. I'm going pretty well.
Yeah, you're flying.
I'm actually going beautifully.
You get Richmond as well? Was it a Carlton? It was a
Carlton home game. Carlton Richmond game.
There you go.
So I'm not going all that badly.
Maybe you should stick with that theory for the rest of the season.
I don't know if I'll stick with the theory, but I went to Melbourne St Kilda yesterday, and I saw a very good team led by a powerhouse ruckman and a midfield that is going to work off him. What a good inclusion Jordan Lewis is to a... It'd be wrong to call them a young midfield because Nathan Jones was an able leader. He's now co-captain, of course. But with everything that they've got at the fall of the ball and Max Gawn getting first touch to most hit-outs, they are going to be a hard team to keep out. They've got a good forward line set up. I mean, it all worked really well yesterday after quarter time. But I've got to say, for two and a half quarters there, for the best part of the game, the meat of the game, Melbourne were a class above and actually a very impressive team.
Yeah, it sort of went the opposite way that I thought the game would. And I think a few people certainly tipped St Kilda to run over the top of the D's. Now, the Melbourne midfield, you spoke about the toughness of them. Clayton Oliver, Nathan Jones, Jordan Lewis, Petrarca as well in there. So... and Viney. So they have big-bodied inside mids in there, but I didn't expect the game to go the way it did, I'll be honest with you. I thought the St Kilda midfield would be a little bit too quick. I didn't know who was going to match up on Jack Stephen because of his speed, but the way that Max Gawn dominated the game, half-backs from Melbourne had an absolute field day led by Bernie Vince. They were on fire. They were all over St Kilda, and I expected more from St Kilda. So early in the season, they looked like from the end of the first quarter that they weren't up for the fight, and Alan Richardson would be really disappointed with that.
I tell you what, I saw an amazing game last night, Brisbane versus Gold Coast. It was the most counterintuitive game I've seen for a long time because the general consensus was that the Gold Coast have got a very potent forward line and their midfield was going to be where the questions were asked, whereas Brisbane... In fact, you could combine the two teams on paper and have an outstanding side because Brisbane's strength seems to all lie in the midfield. Mm. But 47 points down and at the depth of their despair, Gold Coast were winning out of the middle and getting more ball inside 50 than Brisbane, but the forward line just wasn't functioning. They were double-teaming Tom Lynch and Gold Coast instinctively go to Tom Lynch too often.
Yep.
It was too obvious and it was when they... really lifted their eyes in the second half and decided that there were other options. In the end, Tom Lynch proved a good option because he wasn't the only option. But when he was the obvious option, they were picked off time and time again, and Brisbane played the classic counterpunch game of football to get 47 points up. You know how hard it is. So often we see teams bridge big gaps but not win games, and that was the case last night.
It's one thing to come back from a huge deficit. It's another thing to actually get in front and get over the line. And to be 47 points down in your first sort of half of footy, Rockett would be absolutely filthy. Now, he did say in the pre-season, Rockett, that Gary Ablett would be spending a lot more time up forward now. When crisis hit so early in the season, we saw Gary Ablett play majority of the game in the midfield, and young Harris Andrews. Tom Lynch kicked his three yesterday, so he was okay. But Harris Andrews did a terrific job. There was a mountain of footy going inside 50, and for Brisbane to be able to stand up under that heat, they started the game really well, as we said, 47 points up. At some stage, Gold Coast were always going to come, but for Brisbane to hold on in round one with a new coach, the amount of belief that will instill in the club is unbelievable. Chris Fagan would be wrapped with their win. Didn't get carried away too much after the game himself. Brought the whole list in straight after the song and chatted to everyone. So good start for the Lions, not so good for Rocket and the Gold Coast.
We know that Sydney have been slow starters, even in their best years. They, about three years ago now, lost to GWS at the start of the season.
When they were babies, yeah.
Which was a heck of a shock. So we don't throw Sydney away. But for Port Adelaide, much like Brisbane's situation, a lot of pressure on Port Adelaide pre-season. The ante was upped off the field by Coxie, and there's no... he tends to talk a bit, doesn't he?
Yes,
there's
he
does. No question that Kenny Hinckley is being put on notice. Well, if you wanted to know whether or not the players were behind this pressure that was put on him, gee, they were, and a couple of guys that were a bit disappointing last season at times, in Travis Boak and Ollie Wines, they stepped up in no uncertain manner, and they'd be happy to have the hyphen in with them as well.
It was Travis Boak's 200th game, and you hit the nail on the head there. I was looking to see how Port Adelaide would start this season, given that Koshy's comments during the week put real heat and real pressure on Port Adelaide, and certainly Ken Hinckley, before the first bounce of the AFL season, which... not sure if that's needed from the Prez or not, but he's got a daily platform and he does enjoy using that. So, and even guys like Polek, who has been under the pump recently for underperforming in recent seasons. Well, the whole Port Adelaide Football Club have really since 2014. So, well, they're back. I'm calling it early. If you can get a win in Sydney on a small ground and defend the way that they did resolutely, they've tinkered with a few things down back. Certainly their defensive structure was a lot more solid than what it has been. They moved the ball really well. It was like the Port Adelaide of old. And it was really, yeah, really positive signs for Travis Boak's 200th. He had a great day out, kicked his couple and had 26. So off to a flyer, Port Adelaide. That will could shut Koshy up for a few days, maybe, at sunrise.
And I've, well, might not. Might get him chirping. The addition of two big men was very important for Port Adelaide. Paddy Ryder. And the where were you in 2016, Charlie Dixon? Now, Charlie Dixon last year created a lot of buzz by his presence and his ability to open packs, but by the end of the season, the numbers just didn't measure up to the ability. Yesterday, there was certainly, when it mattered, there was a bit more of ball in hand for Charlie Dixon, and if he can just work on that, then they've got a couple of the most imposing big men in the game.
Well, from the outset, he looked on, and he's a real confidence player, Charlie Dixon. In the first quarter, he dominated, took a couple of really good contested marks, and there's no better feeling in your first quarter of footy than getting off to a good start. As a midfielder, if you're coming in at quarter time, you've had your 8 or 10 touches, you know you're off to a good start to the year, and Charlie Dixon would certainly be confident on that. I like the way they used Justin Westhoff as well, different facets and areas of the game. So really well coached by Ken Hinckley, and Port Adelaide would be wrapped.
Now, just very quickly, the two games on Thursday and Friday night went to script in terms of the final result and probably even the way the game played out. Bulldogs wagged their tail when they needed to. Collingwood would be disappointed, probably with the last possession inside 50. There's no use pointing the finger at Chris Mayne or Jesse White or Darcy Moore if you're going to put the ball, not even in 50-50 situations, but if you're throwing the ball well above their heads, it's just there for the ruckman dropping back, even though Bulldogs, by definition, didn't really have a ruckman, but they had enough big man cover to really make it difficult for the forwards. I thought Collingwood had enough ball to ask more searching questions.
They certainly did, and that was where the game was lost from a Collingwood point of view. The Bulldogs, who defend really well, they work really hard, particularly their midfielders, to get back in defence and help out. They did that, and their counter-attack from, as you said, the shallow entries from Collingwood and the ball that actually went in there. There's a few mongrels, a few barrels that went in there, so it wasn't clean ball for those guys you spoke about, and their defensive structure let them down. The Bulldogs, at times, were able to just slice through them and get over the top and kick easy goals. So, but good signs for Collingwood. Come up against last year's premiers and really push them. If they can work on that ball use, they'll win more games than they lose.
Adam Treloar's a mighty player, and he wants to add goals, and he kicked a beautiful goal on Friday night. But his coach, actually, I felt that Nathan Buckley was prone to do this a little bit, and that is trying to kick the skin off the Sharon. There's nothing wrong with kicking the ball soft and 35 or 40 if it lands on a player, or a player can run onto the ball. And Nathan was such an exacting footballer. He wanted to, you know, pierce the heart out of the leading forward. And Adam Treloar, I hope he doesn't smash the ball, because he's a really good player. And as I said, there's nothing wrong, is there, Adam, with setting it up on a soft 35, 40-metre kick?
Yeah, a little bit of finesse at times can't hurt. It's about, sometimes as a midfielder, when you're streaming through, and because he is so quick, it is really hard to slow your mind down, I suppose, when you're in the middle of sprinting and trying to hit a pinpoint pass. So that's one of the toughest things in football, is when you're going flat out and trying to lower your vision. You've got players coming at you. So, but at times, if it is a simple task to hit up a 15-metre lead to a player that's 35, 40 metres out. But, yeah, you just got to lower the eyes at times.
And Tigers, they got the win against Carlton. Carlton were up and about, would be very pleased. I'll tell you who I like for Carlton. He obviously ran out of puff because he hasn't had a pre-season. A month in, this kid Petrescu Seaton is going to be pretty exciting for Carlton fans, I would have thought.
Now, that's what all you want to see from a Carlton point of view for young guys coming in is glimpses, and he ran out of puff, as you said, the second half. He hasn't played one quarter of pre-season football, so even the selection of him's sort of raised eyebrows in terms of his lack of match fitness. He's only a young player, so it's very rare that a first-year player would come in and get a debut game round one after not having a pre-season game. So they obviously rate him really highly. Three or four things I saw where he was really clean with the ball. Just saw enough to show the future of him. But, yeah, second half faded because he's not match fit.
And I'll tell you what, Dustin Martin made it, after one game, made it look as though the elite footballers in the competition just are so superior to everybody else. Well, by the end of the second night, we realised, even though Bontempelli had a telling couple of goals, it's not that easy for the nominal best player on the ground to get best on ground. I mean, you know in your Brownlow year, when things were rolling really well for you, nothing can be taken for granted. The better you go, the bigger the target on your back. Dustin Martin was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a huge start to the year for Dusty. What's he paying for the Brownlow-Coleman double? Because he could have had six on Thursday night.
What was that last handball?
Yeah, he had two.
Kevin Bartlett's statue almost ran home.
He had two of them. He gave young Dan Butler his first goal, which was
fair enough,
which is good. Really unselfish of him. But if he wants to get the Brownlow votes and get himself a Coleman as well.
And a statue.
Yeah, exactly right. If he keeps playing like that, he will have a statue. Don't worry about that. Not sure how they're going to carve the tattoos into his statue.
They paint
erected of him. See how we go.
Well, I reckon Hawthorn and Essendon fans, particularly Essendon fans, are saying, what about us? Hang on, you've talked about all the games, and that was a pretty big night for the Essendon Football Club. Well, they're our first game for big reviews. So we're going to go to the break, and when we return, you can't put years of pain away with one win, but I tell you what, there's not an Essendon fan walking around Melbourne today without a big smile on their face saying, bring on round two, bring on the season, because we are up for it in a very big way. When we return, Adam Cooney and myself, Essendon and Hawthorn under the microscope. Last night at the MCG, in front of 78,294 fans, many of them delirious by game's end, Essendon 17-14, 116, just went away from the Hawks. From midway through that third quarter, they put the foot down and Hawthorn had no response, finishing on 12-19-91. And whilst Essendon welcomed back players who had missed a season, particularly their new captain Dyson Heppel, who was fantastic, the players that played last year for various reasons add to this team in no uncertain manner and definitely benefited from the experience. McDonald, Tipping Whitty, Zach Merritt was probably best on ground. Orazio Fantasia, where would he be without last year's ban? Certainly not as advanced as he is now. What a dangerous forward he is. And even when pressed further up the field, can get his hands on the ball. Goddard seemed ageless last night. You include McKernan, whose effort was more than brave. At times it was commanding. And two youngsters in Darcy Parrish, fast-tracked last year, and young Pigeon McGrath, of course, making his debut. And Essendon seemed to have a mix of returnees, debutants, youngsters, veterans, Kelly still contributing, that worked last night, and no reason why it can't work many times this year. Coons, you saw the game. Just before we talk about the game, as somebody who finished his career at Essendon during a period of great angst for the club, of disruption, what would this mean to those people behind the scenes and those players that have been there for the duration, and most importantly, the fans? It seemed as though the season in prospect was so much better than anything that had preceded in the past 3 or 4 years. But that quickly gets lost with a loss. What does that win mean, round one, for real Essendon people?
Well, I guess it just reinforces the love that the players have for the football club. I mean, there was a lot of anger and a lot of angst, as you said, particularly in 2015. The players have obviously gone away in 2016, reevaluated. Should they go back to the football club? Should they retire for some of them? Or should they move on to another club? And majority of those players have decided that they love the football club and they want to be at the football club for the rest of their career. So you saw guys like Michael Hurley, who recommitted to the club for a long-term deal. Hooker recommitted to the club for a long-term deal. Joe Watson was obviously tossing up whether he was going to actually come back to the game if he was disillusioned. But he came back from overseas in really good shape. And the moment we all saw him and how fit he was, I think we knew at that stage that he would recommit to the footy club. And even a guy like Brent Stanton, who his future has been questioned, for him to play the way that he did last night, to kick his two goals, had a fair bit of the footy. They used him off half back at times, but some good variety there too with Stanton's game. It was a real positive for everyone at the football club. There's no doubt about that. I think even if they lost, it would have been a great night for the club, just for the fans. I sat down for a brief period behind the goals for half a quarter, just to get a little bit of atmosphere and sit in with a few of the Essendon faithful, and they were just so happy that their players, their favourite players, were back playing. But to play that the way they did, Heppel, Watson, Hurley, Stanton, Collier and Hooker were the players back from suspension. Now, Trav Collier was probably the one who was quiet at times, made a few blues, which is to be expected, first game back. But those other guys we mentioned all played their role brilliantly. Hooker kicked three up forward, who probably their most important player. He'll complement Joe Danaher really well, and which will give Joe a better chance, because shouldered a lot of the load last year, Joey Danaher, with not too many other options up forward. So the importance of Cale Hooker coming back. Only played the one game in the VFL last week, coming off a hamstring injury. So, and Heppel was absolutely superb. So for the football club, great signs for the future. Zach Merritt tipped the boys to win the flag this year. So he put Woosher and the other guys under the pump before round one, but they responded really well. And to beat Hawthorn at the G in front of a huge crowd is a terrific start to the year.
Joe Danaher kicked three important goals, but no kick was better than that long bomb that found Dyson Heppel. It was, there were two goals there, the goal to Heppel and then a magnificent goal by McKernan. I mean, just
players playing out of their skin, weren't they? And
well, I've got a feeling as a Hawthorn supporter, when McKernan spun around on basically a step and a half, and kicked it from outside 50.
Yeah,
and the ball straightened up. It did everything that a Buddy Franklin kick would do, actually. It had the shape of a champion goal kicker's kick, and I think Hawthorn supporters at that point are starting to feel quite rightfully ill. So talk us through how Essendon was able to, after a relatively even first half, Essendon got out of the blocks and then to and fro, and Hawthorn held sway at half time. The feeling was that the professional Hawthorn unit would come out and use the ball well and probably deny Essendon enough ball in the second half. And on a day when the opposites happened at just about every ground, the opposite happened. So explain how it happened.
It did. It was very reminiscent of the way that Hawthorn played the last few years and have been so dominant in denying the opposition the ball and taking that option by foot, as Hawthorn was so good at. But we just heard Alistair Clarkson in his post-match press conference talk about uncontested marks, and that's Hawthorn are brilliant at that. It's one thing to know how Hawthorn play, it's another thing to stop it. And Essendon reminded me a lot of Hawthorn, particularly in the second half, how hard they worked off the ball to make the ground big. And when I say make the ground big, if the ball's on the far side of the ground, there's Essendon midfielders spreading all the way to the other side of the ground. Now, three or four players did that on occasion. They knew they weren't going to get the ball, but what that does is open up space through the middle of the ground. And marks at the end of the game, 135 marks to Essendon and 82 to Hawthorn. So the way that they worked and chipped the ball around, their ball use was brilliant. Their efficiency, disposal efficiency, was 77% for the game. If you've watched Essendon play in the last few years, they haven't been anywhere near that elite level of kicking, precision kicking. Ball users off half-back were absolutely brilliant. And Andy McGrath in his first game was really composed with the footy, did some good things, put some hard hits on, laid some great tackles. So that's a tick, had 22 touches. And for a debutant to come out and be as poised as he was, particularly his use off half-back, was brilliant. Had a few nervy moments on Cyril Rioli, which any player would. But I thought he held up really well. James Kelly at the back, in the back half, just patrolling the area. And just to see a guy like Michael Hurley be back in the side gives everyone a lift. But as I said, their ball use was brilliant. Heppel was amazing. Just denied Hawthorn the footy, and they couldn't get it back off them. There was a lot more direct ball use from the Bombers. In the past, we've seen them, if the ball is on one side of the ground, kick the ball back, slow, across, out the other side of the ground. But they look to be using those 45s, their inside 45 degree kicks. And what that does is, it's only a short kick if the ball is trapped on one side of the ground. The Essendon players work so hard to open up that space. A 15 metre kick inside and a bit of overlap run through the middle of the ground really opened Hawthorn up, and they did look vulnerable.
Well, when you're going at 77%, there's a chance you're going to make even the most fastidious and functional of back lines look ordinary, because you're hitting targets. It's exactly what we said Collingwood failed to do against the Bulldogs on Friday night. That being said, I guess one watches the game and felt as though, really, that Hawthorn's back line was susceptible. And susceptible with foot speed, susceptible in reaction time almost. I would go as far as to say, I'm not going to criticise them, and they shouldn't be criticised for leg speed, because that generally is something that comes into play with the ball. But the reaction time, they just got turned and twisted and outled and outfoxed by their Essendon opponents on probably too many occasions for a Hawthorn team that we're used to being so good in the shutdown. Maybe that shutdown only comes after they control the ball or get a stoppage.
Yeah, there's no doubt that they missed. I'm sorry, Hawthorn fans, but there's no doubt that they missed the leadership of Jordan Lewis and Sam Mitchell through the middle of the ground. And the other one is Luke Hodge. So their three best leaders weren't out there last night. And you could tell the way that Hawthorn set up the ground. At times there were too many holes where they would have been filled by Sam Mitchell, by Jordan Lewis. Hodge patrolling at half back there.
Yeah, what a difference that would have made last night.
Yeah, without those three there, they did look vulnerable, and their defensive structure at times had holes in it. Now, Stratton, Gibson, Frawley, not huge leg speed. Birchall's obviously a great user, and Burgoyne and Duray off half back. Burgoyne was moved around a little bit, but the Essendon forwards, led by Fantasia, McDonald, Tip and Woody, they just looked too slick. Gibson and Frawley certainly had their work cut out for them with Joey Danaher and Cale Hooker as well. So, and those two guys up there, I mentioned Danaher and Hooker previously, it forces, because they are big targets, they're strong, good contested marks, it forces players like Frawley and Gibson to actually have to man up and play tighter on their opponent.
The Dyson-Heppel game was reminiscent of Dustin Martin's game. It was powerful through the midfield. I mean, the figures are fairly similar. 33 touches Martin, 34 touches Heppel, 4 goals Martin, 3 goals Heppel. He might not have been quite as damaging up forward. As we said, Dustin gave away a couple of goals, but people were talking about the $200,000 game for, well, actually $1 million game times 5 years for Dustin.
Yeah.
Obviously, Dyson Heppel's in no immediate hurry to leave the Bombers. He's the new captain with a contract that sees him there for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
But that game was pretty close, I would have thought, to Dustin Martin's game in terms of effectiveness. And for a first-up game as a captain, he needs to be highly praised.
Yep, super game by Dyson Heppel. There's no doubt about that. Dyson is a guy who's highly driven, highly motivated, really professional. But on the other, on the flip side of that, he's actually quite laid back off the field. So he's got a great balance of leading the right way on field, doing everything right, but actually relationships with his players as well. Because he is such a laid back guy, he's really easy to talk to. So he's a fantastic choice to lead the Essendon Football Club this year. And for a long time out of the game, to be able to come back and play the way that he did was terrific. Now, to kick 3 goals, he hasn't kicked a huge amount of goals in his career. 34 disposals, led the way, along with Zach Merritt. Zach Merritt was huge in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. He was enormous in the first half, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's just so zippy. He's just one of those players that knows where to go. He's always in the right spot. Beautiful kick. There's a couple of occasions where he just sliced open Hawthorn, where some of the vision that there would be only a handful of players in the competition that actually, on ground level, there's so much going on around you. All you see is opposition players. And for him to be able to pick out the players through the middle of the ground on occasion was sublime. And yeah, I was really impressed with those guys. Brendan Goddard was another one who looked to be slowing down last year, but and even in the preseason, some of his kicking turned the ball over a fair bit in the last game against Geelong in the JLT. But his foot skills were as good as I've seen them for the past couple of years, Brendan. And played a bit of a different role. Usually plays that sort of half back, but played a little bit more on the wing, a little bit more through the midfield, which was good to see.
Now, perceived pressure is real in football, isn't it? We know that Hawthorn have benefited enormously, not only from Rioli's tackles, but from the fact that if you're in the Rioli precinct, you know that he's coming at you at a million miles an hour. Well, Essendon's got one. I mean, off the SMS, here's some great SMSs that I'll go through in a moment.
Yeah.
McDonald, Tipping, Witty, 1 vote. Don't underestimate his influence of his 1%ers. He was extraordinary. His close down speed is excellent. His ability to get a hand in is also very good. And when I was talking about players that were able to just leave their Hawthorn defenders a little flat-footed on the lead and shrug the opponent and get into the dangerous spots, probably with Nous as much as anything, McDonald, Tip and Witty gets top votes.
Yeah, he was really, again, he looks like he has lost a bit more weight and looks a lot fitter than he did first year coming in last year. He lost a lot of weight to be even get onto the rookie list. And he looks like he's leaner than last year. There was one occasion, it was late in the game, I think it was Duray got the ball deep in the back pocket, and McDonald, Tipping, Woody was probably 15 metres away from him and just sprinted at him, and which forced Duray to kick the ball, skied it, and then Dyson Heppel took a great mark and iced the game. So little things like that, when Essendon needed him to stand up and apply that pressure, with Fantasia down there and little Joshy Green. That's three nippy little forwards who, if they're not getting a heap of the ball, because they're not always going, you're not going to get your 15 and 20 every week as that sort of high half forward, but the pressure that they can apply. Now, McDonald, Tippin, Woody had 17 touches last night. I think Josh Green had 15. Ratio Fantasia kicked 4. So if they can play like that every week, it's not always going to work because it's a tough position to play. But all John Worsfold would be looking for from those guys is that pressure to be able to get up the ground, work as hard as they can, and they did it last night.
And credit to John Worsfold, because McDonald, Tippin, Woody made his AFL debut as a halfback flanker, and he was going particularly well.
Yeah, very well.
So switching him up forward in the latter part of last year seemed an unusual move, but it was obviously rounding out his game and understanding that pressure, a small forward who can apply pressure, he must have seen a fair bit of Cyril Rioli in McDonald, Tippin, Woody, and it's not about them being indigenous, it's about closing speed, and it's about the perception and the panic that a player like that can cause. And he obviously wanted it, he's got it, and it worked. A couple off the SMS here, and Richmond had a whipping boy for the best part of 7 seasons, I think, in Tyrone Vickery.
Yeah, it looks
and
like
it's
he's
taken,
the new one.
took about 15 minutes for Hawthorn fans to join in the chorus. You've got to be fair to Vickery, though. He is the second ruckman, and clubs are screaming for this forward who can get into the ruck and give the main ruckman a 20%, 25% chop out. And in the case of McAvoy, who's probably coming towards the end of his career, and a very good career it's been, with his, you know, McAvoy probably needs 25%, 30% of time not rucking, and he can go forward and be dangerous himself. He kicked a goal, Ben. The Tyrone Vickery last night did his job in the ruck, I thought, but he just needs to get some work on the scoreboard. When he has a shot of goal, he just needs his one or two a game to earn his tucker,
yep.
Doesn't he?
Spot on. That's the thing with the new ruck rule, the interpretation in the third man up is out. So if teams are going to play that second ruckman, they need to have good forward craft, and Vickery has that. But he only had the 11 hitouts last night. He had 12 possessions. As you said, if you're going to be the backup ruckman and you're resting forward a fair bit, if you don't kick your one or two, then it's tough to hold your position inside.
Yeah, it's a pay packet thing. And if he kicks 30 goals this year, plus, he earns his pay. But starting off with naught didn't earn him too many plaudits last night. Hawthorn will welcome back Hogs next week, and Hawthorn will also, mark my words, get the ball and use it better than they did last night. As for the Bombers, they won't go 77% every week, but they might go 100% effort every week, because they did in week one. And I've been told by a couple of Essendon fans, McKernan actually kicks those goals as a matter of routine in the VFL, so watch this space. Sean McKernan, a new wonder kid with ball in hand. Tyrone might need to learn a lesson or two. We're going to take a break and come back and discuss an amazing game last night at Metricon. Brisbane get what many people thought that they wouldn't get too easily, a win, and they didn't get it too easily. We'll explain how 47-point lead almost disappeared, but didn't. That little goal around the body by Lewis Taylor was enough to steady up the Brisbane Lions, who get a very valuable win away from home. The final score, Gold Coast, 14-12-96, defeated by the Lions, 15-8-98, in front of 12,710 at Metricon, some of whom saw the AFLW Grand Final, were forced to leave, walk around the streets of Carrara, which I'm pretty sure don't have anything going.
And then, no, there's not much going on around Metricon, is there?
No, just leave and come back in a couple of hours.
There might be a little nine-hole golf course across the road.
Very odd setup, but not ideal, and out of the hands of the AFL after the fiasco at the Gabba.
Was it free entry?
The AFLW.
Okay.
That's right. So the idea was to watch the AFLW and hide.
Exactly right, yeah, hide in the toilet.
Hide in the toilet. Just who's going to get you out? Nobody's going to force you out of the toilet. Exactly. If you've got to go, you've got to go, even if it's for 2 hours.
Strides up and get out of there.
This game last night, if you I'm very interested in Champion Data talking us through this game, because they're very big on stats, and What is Luffy's famous quote? Without stats, you're just another... Can't remember what it is, but it's not complimentary. Well, I tell you what, with stats, you're made to look like a dang fool. Give us the inside 50 count, Adam.
Well, the inside 50 count, at the end of the day, Gold Coast 74 inside 50s, Brisbane 42. The Gold Coast had 31 shots from 74 inside 50s. Now, you look at that and you think, well, geez, Brisbane, they're in for a tough year. So, Dan, uncontested possession, Gold Coast won that, 221 to 170. Marks inside 50, this is huge, 17 marks inside 50 to Gold Coast, only 7 for Brisbane. Clearances, Brisbane got belted in clearances, 43 to 32. Centre clearances, 21 to 11. So, I mean, you look at some of those stats, you think, how on earth... Brisbane won this game.
Now, I'll tell you how they won the game. Because for the best part of three quarters, no, actually the first half really, and a little bit of the third quarter, Gold Coast made the same mistake that they made continuously through 2016, where Tom Lynch was the most kicked at forward in the competition. And they simply... through instinct, not through raising their eyes, kicked the ball to Tom Lynch. Now, Tom Lynch is a mighty good footballer, but Tom Lynch is always going to get more than one opponent, and which he was double-team and triple-teamed, if a side is so predictably just going to kick to him. In the second half, they did something quite interesting. They took Miller out of the midfield for part of the second half, made him a hit up forward. That worked for a goal, but it also worked for a couple of handy possessions. They did likewise with Jack Martin. Aaron Hall, he's an interesting player, Aaron Hall. His worst is unacceptable. It was pointed out last night on the commentary that his inability to lay a tackle on an immediate opponent in that first quarter rampage where 7 goals got sprayed on by Brisbane with little or no attention from the Gold Coast midfield, Aaron Hall was a serious offender. And then when they started getting in the game, and I'm not saying he's a downhill skier, because he actually helped turn the game around, but his effort with and without ball, the gap between those two stages of play is unacceptable. And I know Rodney Ead knows, because he dropped him last year.
Yeah, and it's going to be extremely hypocritical for me to say something like this, but because I didn't do too much of that myself when I played the game. But his best when he's attacking is brilliant. The game has changed in the past few years. He got dropped last year, 9 Brownlow votes, Aaron Hall, in the first 3 rounds, I think. So he started off the year on fire in terms of the way he attacks. But as you said, defensive transition was a thing that irked Rodney Ead, hence him getting dropped and spending some time in the kneeful. So, but as you say, he had kicked 2 and had 25. So you look at that and you think, geez, he's had a reasonable game. But he needs to probably do more defensively, that's for sure. Now Gary Ablett didn't get off to the best start. Didn't touch the ball in the first 15 minutes, but then came to life. So, and little Ainsworth kicked his couple on debut.
He popped up number 27. I kept looking for who's number 27. There was a couple of interesting players for both teams. One of them was for the Brisbane Lions. It's their captain, Dane Beams. Better for the run. Look, still very good, but just couldn't quite finish the game off. And then for Gold Coast, Jared Witts played a very good game in the ruck. But because he did most of the rucking on his own, allowing Peter Wright to stay up forward, in that vital last 6 or 7 minutes, realising the Gold Coast had basically caught up the margin, and for 6 or 7 minutes, they just needed to play some yardage football. And Witts was very good for the bulk of the game in giving them some yardage advantage, but when they really needed just a couple of balls, not only yard-wise going their way, but actually travelling their way. Easier to run onto a ball that's heading towards your goal, isn't it, than one that's going away from goal. He couldn't win a tap-out in the last 5 minutes because he was absolutely stuffed. He's like that marathon runner that collapses 100 metres from the line. So
both crawl to the line. Now, that's the thing when you 47 points down,
yeah.
you spend all your tickets trying to get the game back to an even keel, and ran out of puff in the last couple of minutes, Jared Witts. But yeah, he had a pretty good game. As you said, better for the run. Dane Beams, you spoke
it's
about.
It's hard to keep up with Stephen Martin, too. He's pretty mobile.
Well, yeah, exactly right. And what Stephen Martin does, I think he bench presses a ridiculous amount, 150, 160 kilos, and can run. So his endurance is right up there. And he gets plenty of the footy, too, Steph Martin. He's not one of those ruckmen that just tap and jog around.
He works.
Gets his 20, 23 touches a game. So great signs for Brisbane.
Watch this space, Eric Hipwood. Now, he only kicked two goals, but he's mobile. He moved around. And one of the goals was the laziest kick from 55. When I say lazy, the softest action, it just flew through from, he must have kicked it from 65 metres out. Now the boys got, I'll tell you what, the boys got something. Watch this space, Eric Hipwood will be some sort of key forward. Well done, Brisbane, you're up and running. Well, welcome back. Well, just enough time to tell you that we're heading off to the 11 o'clock news, but when we come back, John Ralph, everything from injuries to Match Review Panel, and of course, the first question asked will be Nick Riewoldt's knee. Hang on till after 11 for the answer from Johnny Ralph. Welcome back to the second half of Inside Football for your full footy analysis, and plenty of football to come today on 11:16 SEN. We head straight from full-on footy to Etihad Stadium for North Melbourne versus West Coast. Another fascinating game. Andy Maher and David Schwartz calling the action. Special comments. What a team. Danny Frawley and Nick Del Santo. Brett Anderson on the boundary, and Rowan Connolly part of the preview as well. Then a special edition of Finey's Final Siren at 4:30 to 6:30. Deep analysis of North Melbourne West Coast, and we look back at all the games of the weekend, taking your calls, and I can't wait to hear from Bombers fans and Demon fans in particular as they put, in the case of Melbourne, a hoodoo to bed, and in the case of the Bombers, a period of great pain to bed. Well done, those two clubs. After the siren, it's off to Fremantle. Another fascinating game. Fremantle taking on the Cats. Tim Gossage to call with Ben Allen and Darren Gaspar in special comments. And that will see you right through till 10:30 tonight. So football till late on a Sunday night. Wouldn't have it any other way. And Coons, every Sunday morning, we're going to be joined by Johnny Ralph for the latest intel, injury and Match Review Panel out of the Herald Sun Sports Desk. He does it, though, not from a sports desk, generally from a park where he's taking his kids for a Sunday morning kick around. So let's find out where Ralphie is this very morning. How are you, John?
Hello, boys. Finey, I'm here to make your day in a couple of minutes. But first, though, yeah, it's been a Bunnings trip. We've got a smoke alarm issue, had a little jog. It's all the things you try to squeeze into what should be a seven-hour Friday, Sunday. Seems to be in about 55 minutes on a Sunday morning. But that's life. That's why we love what we do.
You bet. Family's got to get some time, and that time that family does get, I steal off you for all important injury updates. And, of course, the one that everybody wants to know about, not just St Kilda fans, because At his age, Nick Riewoldt and an ACL, when, dare I say it, and I don't even like mentioning these words, it could have been the end for Nick Riewoldt when he went off on that stretcher on the the horror car, the one you don't want to be on. The last thing you want to be on is that. What is the news this morning?
Well, Nick has posted this morning on Instagram that you talk of that car. He said that his son was very excited that daddy got to ride on the buggy. But the few sentences before that in his Instagram update were that three words, no structural damage. And that is music to the ears of, as you say, every football fan, but also St Kilda fans. Now, we will wait to see now how long he is back, until he is back from football. As he said, there is no prognosis on the recovery. Now, this is a knee that clearly got a hyperextension. He felt the pop. So whether there is bone bruising, you would absolutely expect that to be the case. Whether there is swelling in a knee that's already been surgically repaired at times, three or four times, so he'll have fluid in the knee. You know, potentially there's a little, whether it's a meniscus tear or something like that. Certainly no specific update on those fronts yet. But the fact that Nick Riewoldt is back playing football at some stage, maybe in 6 weeks, maybe in 10, is music to the ears of everyone.
Ralphie, was at the game yesterday, Melbourne versus the Saints. Max Gawn spent about 10 minutes down into the rooms getting his back looked at, came back out onto the ground, tested it out. While he's off the ground, the D's kicked about four goals, so I think he was pretty keen to get back out there quickly, but he's all okay?
Yeah, he's all okay. What a bizarre reason as well that he punched the ball from a stoppage so long that he tweaked his back. Now, we saw him getting more strapping on that. It seems that's an injury that has hampered him a little bit already. So maybe that's the reason why Jack Spencer has played at times in the ruck in the JLT. He should be fine. Of course, we saw him spark the role. Not spark the resurgence, part of that resurgence. The news won't be as good for Joel Smith, the young son of Sean Smith, who's looked so exciting and made a great fist of his debut. Unfortunately, he was involved in an incident with Nick Riewoldt where he fell forward. As often is the case, it seemed pretty innocuous, but unfortunately that shoulder popped out. And if you're a superstar close to finals, you can strap it up maybe after a few weeks. But I think we would feel like he will be in for shoulder reconstruction. And unfortunately, the youngster from Sydney, Dan Robinson, is in the same boat. The shoulder slipped out. John Longmire did suggest that he was in for some type of rehab and potentially surgery. So a couple of young kids really trying to make their way in the world. In round one, seemed like they could be out for 3 or 4 months.
Cyril seemed somewhat stymied by a leg injury. Hopefully nothing more than a cork.
Yeah, only a cork here early in the second quarter, and he went off and did have that strapped up. Now, his coach made an excuse for him and said, look, he clearly was limited. But sometimes Cyril has those games, you know, when the forward pressure isn't quite there and he just doesn't catch fire. For all of his brilliance, he is a little bit of a hot and cold player. He was very cold last night. Now, after the game, Alistair Clarkson also confirmed that not only would Luke Hodge play next week, of course, as we all would realise, but he did actually play in a VFL practice game against Essendon at Tullamarine in swirly conditions. Wasn't exceptional, but it did exactly what he needed to do, as he did the previous Friday at Icon Park. So he'll come back not only realising that he gets to play AFL football, but realising that he's had a fair kick in the bum as he sat watching and trying to do some coaching manoeuvres from the coach's box. His side floundered without him. You know, so a big opportunity for him to prove to everyone that he's still in love with AFL football next week.
I reckon if Clarko had a time machine, he'd play this week.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And look, I know that the club said that Alistair had no part in that decision, but quite clearly Alistair would have had it run by him before. Isn't it hard? If it's round 15 or round 18, he probably plays. But because it's round one, and because Jared Ruff is the captain, he clearly, did the right thing in terms of a cultural perspective. But, he's just been rolling out of training and, let's put it this way. If this was a side that hadn't won four premierships, would Luke Hodge have missed that training session? No. So I think Luke still needs to prove to everyone that the fire is still in the belly.
Ralphie, moving on to a player from my old side, Dale Morris. Looked a really bad one. Obviously went down, the leg buckled under him. Same leg that he broke, I believe, as he had scans on that. It looked like, to me, it could be a fracture.
Yeah, I'm worried about it. Now, quite typically now, the Western Bulldogs keep their cards really close to their chest and they'll put out an injury release. Well, it tends to be about 5 o'clock on a Sunday night, but potentially even Monday. But, they talked about flexing and twisting and a knee and an ankle. But what we saw on the ground was that Dale Morris grabbed for that bottom lower half of his leg, which, as you say, is exactly the area that took about 2 weeks, 2 years, Coombs, to get back from. So we don't want to be doomsayers, but we're worried about that.
Yeah, he's as tough as a steak from Audi, though. He got up straight away, Dale Morris, and limped off. So, as you said, he did miss. He snapped the tibia and the fibula, came back, and then had some stress reactions in the same leg, so no doubt that it would be a little bit weaker, I suppose, than what it usually was. So maybe a little hairline fracture for Dale Morris, so we wish him the best and hopefully it's not the case.
Now, a couple of reports, and there's no question Travis Varko took Luke Dalhouse out. It wasn't in the actual play, even though probably deemed in play after the Barry Hall incident of many years ago. Everything's in play. But the question is whether or not he struck him in the head. You know, when I look at it, when I looked at it, and the good news for Varko is that Dalhouse played a full game, but when I saw it, it really seemed upper sort of shoulder to shoulder to me, but there was a whiplashing of the head that will do Varko no good.
Yeah, and this is why sometimes we get confused by match review panel incidents. He came off the back of the square. He wasn't looking in any way at Luke Dalhouse. Now, the ball was travelling to Luke, but as is his way, it was intercepted by Scott Pendlebury. So maybe the AFL will say that this was in play, or as they call it, careless rather than intentional. But I felt like he picked him off. Now, clearly there was some contact from Varko's shoulder to Dalhouse's head. Was it the majority of it? Was it predominant? Was it 80%? Was it 15%? That's the thing the match review panel looks at. But I reckon that what we look at, incidents that should be in our game and those that shouldn't. And I think on the balance of probability, he came off the back of the square, hit a bloke really hard in some way to the head, clearly more than low contact. So for me, it's medium impact and intentional. It's 3 weeks down to two. But, you know, the tribunal has its vagaries and has its different way of looking at things at times.
Rafi, given the fact that it was within sort of 2 metres of the play, could Collingwood use the defence of him shepherding for Pendlebury, who actually got the ball at that stage? Or is that does everything go out the window because some of that contact was high?
No, there are times when you can shepherd, and we know now that obviously, you know, all those years ago when we saw McGinnity hit by Nick Del Santo,
Nick Maxwell,
it was cut and dried. If you had contact to the head, then you were responsible for it. Now there are things like, does the player expect it? You know, did you jump off the ground? Was it a football incident? There's only 8 or 9 little clauses there that sometimes are caveats that help you get off. I just think in this case, though, if you look at that incident in fast forward or in slow motion or whatever you want to call it, I think he knew what he was doing and he was hitting a player hard. Now, you know, what will the match review panel do? You go mad, you go broke trying to predict what they'll do. But for some reason, that's why that's what they pay us to do here in the AFL.
We actually just saw it on TV again. So there's probably a case to answer. I reckon Travis Varko is going to be as nervous on Thursday night as he is on Monday night.
I think the impact... majority of the impact of the hit was to the chest shoulder area. There was minimal impact to the head, so I would be letting him off for that one, just because it was within a couple of metres of the ball. He was blocking for his opponent and majority of the contact was not to the head, but once again, I'm not on the MRP. Final one, Ralphie, Bernie Vince.
On Nathan Wright.
Wright, wasn't it? Oh, I think I had, there's too many tattoos there in those Saint Kilda side.
Yeah, it's on Nathan Wright. And yeah, okay, because there's another one as well.
Wasn't fist to the head.
No, it's okay.
At the moment, it was a shepherd. It was more of the upper arm. Look, at worst, this is a low-impact incident, but I think Bernie Vince is more than, well, he's certain to play round two, and I think he's probably unlikely even to be hit with a $1,500 fine.
Yeah, might get thrown out. Maybe Levi Casbolt might be not so lucky.
Yeah, that was a hit on Nick Vlosten. So it was a shepherding incident. Vlosten sort of ran into him. He held his ground. He did lean in towards him and it's sort of the upper shoulder to Vlosten's head. Vlosten got up, because that's what Vlosten does. I think that's more of a football incident than certainly the one that involved Travis Varko.
So watch this space. And Levi Casbolt, even though he has his critics, he played a pretty important role supporting Cruiser in the ruck, and Carlton will be having to search for another ruckman. I don't know whether Phillips is right to go. Maybe Phillips, I'm not quite sure. I know Gorringe is out for a while, but it gives Carlton more questions than they would want to be answering in round two. Great work.
Yeah. Thank you, boys. And as I let you go as well, Nick Rewald is just speaking to the Seven Network. Of course, he's contracted to them. So I'm sure your producer will turn that around and you'll be able to hear from him too in what is very positive news for the game.
Yeah, so we don't know how long Nick Rewald will be out for, but the word is no structural damage in terms of an ACL, which was potentially career-ending. We've got to accept that at Nick Rewald's age and all these contracts are now season by season, to do an ACL in round one might have been the end of a famous career. But it seems as though there's more of Nick to come. and more of John Ralph to come right throughout the year. We'll let you get back to unwrapping your Bunnings stuff, because remember, whatever you buy at Bunnings has to be installed. So up the ladder you go, son, and be careful.
Thanks, boys.
The smoke alarm, with all its danger in terms of fitting, I need the boy for the season, so he needs to be careful. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Coons, you were at the Melbourne St Kilda game, and I was probably too despondent to give a fair analysis. When I say despondent, all right, I am a St Kilda supporter, but I tell you what, was I impressed by Melbourne? A team that was facing two hoodoos, one that had seen them win once at Etihad in the last 24 games, and another one that seen them not beat St Kilda since Grant Thomas was coach of the Saints. So after a pretty poor first quarter, Melbourne absolutely played finals football, make no bones about it. And when we come back, Adam Cooney will tell us exactly what that brand of football was, who were the stars, and how St Kilda got made to look second rate on their home dung heap. Obviously, all we want to hear as St Kilda supporters is about the knee, because the game itself, there was no positives out of that for St Kilda. I'll tell you this much, that when a team that has such a poor record at the ground and such a poor record against the opposition is jumped early, not just four goals down at quarter time, but also conceding the first goal of the second quarter, it takes a great deal of stability, maturity and self-belief more than anything else to come through the way Melbourne did, turn it around so quickly to lead at half time. But the game was fairly even at half time, and the contest was put to bed in the first 15 minutes of that third quarter. They benefited from the inclusion of Jordan Lewis, no question about that. Just as Hawthorn missed him, Melbourne used him. Clayton Oliver is a slimmer, leaner, fitter, more mobile version of the very good player that we'd already seen. And now he's just a ball-getting and clever ball-using, mainly by hand, machine, all serviced by the most potent ruckman in the competition. It's a game that was, again, counterintuitive, because, as Adam Cooney said, a lot of people believed that St Kilda would pressure and, in the end, out-hassle and come over the top of Melbourne, but the exact opposite happened. It was St Kilda incapable of maintaining pressure against a Melbourne team that was able to spread at ease. And Coons, you were there. The final score, 18-12-1-20. Demons bust hoodoos and get off to a great start. St Kilda 13-12-90 in front of 36,249, of which you were one. Tell us how it all happened.
I was on the boundary for this one, and it was so evident after the half-time, or probably halfway through the second quarter, the switch in the intensity around the ball, particularly St Kilda really dropped away in that area. They got off to a flying start. But Melbourne's mids, led by Clayton Oliver, who, I must admit, when they said pre-season that he might be the best of the lot, sort of had a bit of a giggle to myself. But he's only a young kid. He had 36 disposals yesterday. And for him to be leading the way in that area, I thought he was huge all day. Another one, leading into the game, I was really concerned about Melbourne's backline. The two McDonalds, Oscar and Tom, I really thought they'd have their work cut out for them with McCartan, Bruce and Membry down there. And we spoke pre-game about McCartan. It was actually left out of the side. It was a late change. So they said he was managing hamstring soreness, but he's playing in the VFL today. So not sure if you've got hamstring soreness that you run around in the VFL.
You do not.
One of their future stars as a key forward. So I thought that the Saints would get a real advantage out of their taller, bigger forward line with the two McDonalds trying to hold down the fort back there. As it turned out, they brought Loney in, who didn't have an impact on the game, unfortunately. And Riewoldt was left to play more up forward, where I would love to have seen Nick Riewoldt up on that wing, which he dominated last season. I played on him last season, and his work rate to stay on a wing and run up and down, particularly to get back in defence, but then as soon as the Saints got the ball, he would charge forward, and he's really hard to match up on. But look, this game was won in the midfield purely by the Demons applying the amount of pressure that they did around the ball. And their setup behind the footy, was really organised. There was a couple of times where St Kilda actually got the ball, moved it really quickly, but Tom McDonald and Bernie Vince were the two who held back the fort down there. Tom McDonald sort of sat maybe 80 metres off the ball in the middle of Etihad, and whichever way St Kilda moved the football, Tom McDonald would slide over. At times, Bernie Vince was playing on Josh Bruce. Now, you would think that Josh Bruce's power as a forward and running would get the better of Bernie Vince, but those two were just swapping over. If Bruce went, would run deep, Tom McDonald would take him. So really well organised by Tom McDonald. I thought he was one of the most important players on the ground in terms of keeping that Melbourne defensive structure. Bernie Vince ran right off half-back. It was a great day to be a half-back for the Melbourne Demons.
And I tell you what, any time that Jaden Hunt got the ball, it was bad news for St Kilda. He was just he's very fast.
Yeah.
There's not too many that can keep up with him, and he takes the game on, but he was hot knife through butter. Every time he got it, it was bad news for St Kilda.
Yeah, and he makes a couple of blues, but players who take the game on, that generally happens. It's risk versus reward. And Bernie Vince, Christian Salem, Jake Melksham, who didn't have his best game yesterday, butchered the ball a little bit and was a touch off the pace at times, got done holding the ball, but I think once he gets his match awareness back over the next month or so, he'll be really important off half back as well. Stretch played back there, and I thought Bernie Vince was one of the more important players on the ground, was able to roam free too often. In the midfield, Jack Stephen was the one who tried hard all day. He's their most dominant midfielder, but really dropped away after that.
Well, I thought Jack Steele was okay.
Yeah, Jack Steele was good. He had 23 touches.
The rest of it was one
there's
paced.
Too many players for St Kilda that are similar.
Yep.
Billings, Nunes, Loney, Dunstan, Gresham. Now, Gresham was fantastic yesterday. Kicked three goals and provided a real spark. But those guys who we mentioned, that's where the improvement is going to come from a St Kilda point of view. And if they're all not playing well, it leaves their midfield too shallow in terms of their depth. So they can't rely on Jack Stephen getting the job done every week. Armitage had a tight hip flexor at one stage, so he didn't have his best day. He only had the 16 possessions. So Seb Ross was another one
He seemed squeezed out to me with Jack Steele there.
Yeah, and he would have liked to have got his season off to a better start. So if those midfielders, and St Kilda's brand is high pressure, high octane football, and that really was evident that in the first quarter, they got off to an absolute flyer, and I thought that the game would go that way for majority of it, but it turned out that Melbourne turned the tables pretty quickly. They were able to arrest momentum, certainly inside the stoppages. They just belted the Saints in terms of disposal. At the end of the day, they had 454 touches to St Kilda's 337. 306 uncontested possessions, which was the ease in which Melbourne were able to move the football. And that was led a majority from Tom McDonald patrolling back there and Bernie Vince just racking him up at will.
And it really was, for a Saints fan, it was very upsetting and painful to watch, chasing shadows and almost being toyed with. I mean, that margin flattered St Kilda because for much of the game, obviously the first quarter helped the margin, but beyond that, St Kilda were really being toyed with. They never were able to get a handle on the game, and Melbourne really were, it was how much they were going to win by from a long way out.
Yeah, Nick Rewell kicked the first goal in the second quarter, which put them 30 points up, and then the Simon Goodwin factor, I suppose. Paul Roos has put in place really solid defensive structure and game plan. I spoke to Simon Goodwin before the game. I said, how much did you tinker with your game plan compared to Paul Roos? Simon said that previous season when Paul was still the coach, they started to implement some of Simon Goodwin's tactics and game plan that he wanted to use. And we saw that was evident from after that Nick Rewalt goal, the way that Melbourne are going to play this year under Simon Goodwin. It's hard, it's physical, but it's attacking flair. And Paul Roos has put the defensive structures in place, and now Simon Goodwin has come in and put his attacking flair on it. And look, they're great to watch. They haven't been great to watch at Etihad for a decade. They haven't beaten St Kilda for a long time either. So they certainly turned that around yesterday. And if that's a sign of things to come, the way that the Melbourne Demons are going to play under Simon Goodwin, well, they'll make the eight.
off the SMS, finally your thought on a few points. Backline too big, Brown out, Dempster in. It's a very, very good backline and a very good side to keep Sean Dempster out, and St Kilda were neither yesterday, so I expect Sean Dempster to be in. The game relies on that work rate, that pressure, that version of the Bulldogs game that actually succeeded against the Bulldogs. The last 2 years they've split the game against the Doggies. Mm. Well, St Kilda were chasing tails yesterday. It's a lot better when you don't fumble the ball. If the ball's yours, you look a lot quicker than if you're conceding possession. But the other problem St Kilda had yesterday was, in two wins over Melbourne last year, Tom Hickey broke even at least with Max Gawn. Yesterday, he did not break even with Max Gawn. And how much confidence does a deep midfield, because Melbourne has a deep midfield, Jones, Viney, Brayshaw, we haven't mentioned Oliver yet, the best of them yesterday,
Jordan
Lewis,
forgot about him.
Melksham, and
Bernie Vince is in there, Petrarca's in there, Viney, oh, you said Viney.
Dom Tyson.
They bat pretty deep now. And those majority of those guys that you mentioned yesterday.
Dom Tyson will be there. Christian Salem. So how much confidence does that power midfield, which is what it is, get knowing that they work at the feet of the best ruckman in the comp? Mm.
Well, knowing that your big ruckman's going to have 60 hit-outs for the game, you go into the game licking your lips, really. Clayton Oliver, Nathan Jones, Jordan Lewis, Bernie Vince all had over 30 possessions, and three out of those four guys are all midfielders. Jordan Lewis, when things weren't going well for Melbourne early in the game, he was the one. First game for the club who kept them in the game. He had 20 possessions in the first half and was instrumental in holding down the fort through the midfield there when it wasn't going so well. And halfway through the third quarter, Jordan Lewis ran off, had a spell on the bench, and standing ovation from the Melbourne supporters. So it didn't take him long to endear himself to his Melbourne fans, and Hawthorn fans would be absolutely spewing that he's not at the Hawthorn Footy Club.
They also had a very good player at the drop of the ball. I mean, Jeff Garlett has had his critics, but maybe the beard is his way of disguising the past and creating something anew. He was good at the drop of the ball and kicked exactly the sort of roving goals and sweeping goals that Jeff Garlett should be getting. Makes it, at the feet of Jesse Hogan, dangerous to play the 50-50 spoil.
Yeah, and the other one, to add a little bit more speed, the other end of the ground was Neville Jetta.
Both ends, they were well served at the drop of the ball,
yeah,
weren't they?
They've missed those two players who haven't played too much in the pre-season. They just added a different element of speed, and it's a pretty complete Melbourne outfit when you look at it. Now, I may have underestimated them yesterday against the St Kilda Football Club. I won't be doing that again. I did pick Melbourne to slide into the eight in my pre-season predictions, but I didn't think that they would dominate, certainly around the ball, and run right as much as they did yesterday.
I'll tell you what, two players that... it's easy to forget these two players because they're probably in the bottom six by name. But I'll tell you what, just when you think that you've covered off on Jack Viney and a young Clayton Oliver and Jordan Lewis, there was plenty of space and plenty of use of space by Neil Bullen and young Stretch. So they end up with players that are most effective in finding less man-on-man focus than some of the big names in the team. And I thought Neil Bullen and Stretch were there plenty of times to thrust the ball forward, kick a good goal, Neil Bullen, and be part of very much the win.
Yeah, no doubt. And you look through the stats on Melbourne's list yesterday and watching the game, I couldn't pick a player who didn't play their role. Another guy on debut yesterday, Mitch Hannon, who's come from the Footscray Football Club.
Oh, he kicked a great roving goal. He barely grabbed the ball. That was an uncanny goal at a time when the back was being broken of the Saints. And it was actually a piece of play where St Kilda was able to get a spoil in and would have thought, all right, let the ball be a 50-50 contest. Let's get a stoppage here. Let's get something. Let's stop the bleeding. No, this kid Hannon That was one heck of a goal.
And he's got a couple of highlight reels from when he played at Footscray. He takes a good hanger too. He's got good hops about him. I thought he had a reasonable leap at one yesterday, but just didn't get his hands on the ball. So look out for him to be taking mark of the week at some stage too.
And it doesn't just show how Simon Goodwin is in tune with his list. I mean, Hannon, I think he might have played a game at Casey rather than in the JLT series, but he...
I think he played might have played the last game.
At Casey?
At JLT.
Yep. But he certainly started off in the team seconds, and that's a fair way back for round one. But Simon Goodwin obviously has a real good handle on his list. Now, Jack Watts yesterday actually didn't run Jack's way, but he certainly was there. Again, when St Kilda were being put to the sword, he was another option competing along with Wiedemann. And
yeah, he's one we haven't mentioned either. Wiedemann, who's the star of the future.
Yeah, so they're there competing and capable of kicking goals. Of course, we know Jack Watts is one of the best kicks in the competition. So whilst a win like that will show every player in a good light, I think some of the players whose names are less... I'll tell you what, that Joel Smith could play. Now, there's an unfortunate injury, shoulder injury.
He started off well, had the five touches halfway through the first quarter.
He looked nice. It just shows that Simon Goodwin has a real
he's got good relationships
with
his
players
early.
I don't want to say this. He has a beverage-like feel for every player on the list.
That is exactly what I was going to say next. So, and they're the new wave coaches, the ones that embrace their players, care for their players, and had a couple of beers with Simon Goodwin over the journey, and it seems like he would be that type of coach to his players. So that's the new wave. Get in touch with the modern coach, with your feelings and your emojis. Like Rocket's sending emojis to players now, which is a bit odd, I think. But
frowny, anyway. Frowny face. Yeah. Lost to Brisbane.
Swearing emojis.
I'll say this: what's great with a coach like that is that every player on the list knows that they are a chance of playing senior football, which means every player on the list knows that they're a chance of missing out on senior football. Makes it pretty competitive.
Just a quick one off the SMS. Kent, Vandenberg, Frost, Hibbard, Tyson, Bug and Harms all not playing yesterday. So that's plenty of depth.
Interesting to see what Hibbard brings to the dynamic. Very professional, hard-nosed defender. Yeah, there's versions of Melbourne that we haven't seen yet, but the one that we saw was fantastic. Well done, Dees. It does not pain this St Kilda supporter to see a strong Melbourne, believe you me. The time is nigh, and bring it on. Look forward to their next 21 games and maybe even some after that. After the break, did you pick it? Sydney versus Port Adelaide? Unless, like me, you forgot to put your tips in. I bet you didn't.
You did pick it.
There's a... very satisfied, Ken Hinckley. The effort was there in a win that, in the end, this is probably the most striking element of it, was comfortable because they challenged the Sydney Swans. You bet they did. And it was pretty close at half time, but the expected Swans comeback after three-quarter time never eventuated, thanks to that effort and the quelling of the obvious route back into the game, Buddy Franklin, by the clever placement of Homps. In the end, Port Adelaide 17-8-110, defeat Sydney 12-10-82 in front of 33,129 fans at the MCG, including political clout from China, political clout from Australia. Malcolm Turnbull was there.
From royalty to clout.
Yeah, clout. Chinese Premier, Mr. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was there. He would have been happy Gold Coast and Port Adelaide won. That would have been a surprise. He's got a blockbuster on a golf driving range in a few weeks' time. But Coons, before we worry about golf footy on a golf driving range, tell me how Port Adelaide won footy on a cricket ground known as the SCG.
Well, it was all about the start from Port Adelaide, wasn't it? If they got their confidence up early, you knew that they would be in for a show. In saying that, I didn't think that Port Adelaide would get anywhere near Sydney, especially on their home deck, the way that they played. But they've just seemed to have tinkered with their defensive structure. They spoke Ollie Wines spoke earlier in the pre-season about limiting their risk coming out of the back line and kicking more rather than that sort of slingshot, high-risk, high-reward type play. That now, playing on the SCG, you can be a lot more direct because it is a smaller ground. Paddy Ryder in the first quarter, good to see him back. Charlie Dixon was one who is a confidence player, got his hands on the footy, clunked a couple of great contested marks early, kicked two goals in the first quarter, and from there you could see the Port Adelaide players' spirit lifted. They were up and about. Robbie Gray spent a lot of time in the forward line. I think he's a little bit underdone. So I think he only had eight possessions yesterday, and if you went in before the game, you said, look, Robbie Gray's going to have eight possessions, you would think that Port Adelaide would be no chance running coming up against a rampant Sydney Swans midfield. But the Swans midfield were down for the majority of the evening. Dan Hannabury, who has been off the booze all pre-season since the grand final, hasn't had a drink. Only had only had the 18 possessions yesterday. So he's changed up his routine. 18 touches. He wouldn't have had 18. That's the lowest amount of possessions I think he would have had for a long time. So maybe a couple of vodka, lime and sodas this week for Dan Hannabury. Kieran Jack was down. You can always rely on Josh Kennedy having a great game. But I thought Ollie Wines was instrumental. He had a point to prove. Travis Boak in his 200th game, who we spoke about, was terrific. So those two guys in the middle of the ground. I like the way that they used Justin Westhoff at times. They have had him as the spare back. You said Homsch played that role, certainly in the second half at times, sitting in front of Buddy Franklin to help Clurry out. But
I mean, first of all, he quelled Sam Reed, who got off to a very good start.
Yeah, and he was one from Sydney who got off the chain early, who he does look really damaging, Sam Reed, when he gets his hands on the footy. He's a great contested mark. I think might have kicked a three yesterday for the Swans, but Westhoff starting on the wing as well, in the similar role to that Nick Riewoldt, who I was speaking about previously, really hard to match up on. If he runs back, runs forward, and he took, I can't remember who he was playing on, but it was a little, at a much smaller opponent on him at the time, started on the wing and then just pushed forward. So, and that when you're forced, you've got a tall player in Westhoff, you're forced to go with him. So it was a good play from Ken Hinckley, but the one man that we need to focus in on, Sam Paupepa. On debut, first quarter, he got the footy in the forward line. It was picked it up, Dustin Martin type, don't argue. Eventually lost the ball and then went cracking in after it, put his head over the footy and won a hard ball. And in the first quarter of footy, went on to have 19 disposals for the game and kicked two goals. To go at pick 18 in the draft looks to be an absolute steal from Port Adelaide. He's a player in the Dustin Martin type ilk. He's powerful, he's strong. Once he gets his endurance levels up, I think they've found themselves a player there, Port Adelaide.
What a fascinating story Aaron Young is. Aaron Young, a Victorian who was played back of the ball at the start of his career by Port Adelaide and really was maybe a 26th to 29th man on the list, in and out of the side. I remember him and that guy with the ponytail man bun with the black hair were always in and out of the team. And
Kane.
Yeah, that's right. Kane.
What's his last name?
Kane, sometimes Abel.
Muscly little fella.
Yeah, they were just... And Aaron Young was looking for another home, actually. He's an Eastern Suburbs boy.
Got the man bun as well.
Yeah, so. Eastern Suburbs boy. And last year they gave him one more chance and they rolled the dice up forward. Mm. And he kicked three or four in a game. Kane Mitchell,
there we go. Well done.
They rolled the dice up forward with him, and it worked. And you thought, that's nice. He's going to look back at his career and have a game where he kicked four goals.
Yeah, he's kicked four.
And it kept happening and happening and happening. And now he's a mid-sized forward that plays more as a small forward. He's more a drop of the ball forward than a marking mid-sized forward. And he's no fluke. He's no freak. He's no flash in the pan. He needs to be watched every single game And it's a real resurrection, isn't it?
What he does do is get himself in the right spot. He's not as powerful as a Sam Powell Pepper, which I just spoke about. But, yeah, as I said, he gets in the right spots and he is crafty. He's nippy, kicked 3 goals yesterday. And as you said, it's becoming more...
Pretty standard for him. And he's got the ability to sort of press it on the afterburners a bit. He can maybe learn from the run out of the back line. But his first 2 or 3 steps, not only straight lines, but sometimes laterally, are very quick and get him off the leash. It's sort of like grab his man bun because he's gone.
Yeah, and we spoke about previously quickly on Jared Polak, who has been challenged at times. I thought he ran really hard yesterday. There has been question marks, certainly when he got to the Port Adelaide Football Club, on his work rate and his work ethic, but... Worked extremely hard yesterday. Didn't get a heap of the ball, but always provided that link-up option. Chad Wingard was one who toyed with him, having him in my Supercoach team, but I just thought that he might spend more time up forward. But they used him in the midfield yesterday. He was superb. He's so hard to match up on as a forward. He kicked 3 yesterday, and he was brilliant. But the difference, I think, were the two best midfielders on the ground, Ollie Wines and Travis Boak. They were huge.
Yeah, great to see Travis Boak back in the sort of form that made him irresistible in their finals campaigns. That's it for us. We're up and running for season 2017. Big thanks to Allan Mans Motors, our sponsors. Let's head to Etihad Stadium after the break. North Melbourne West Coast, Andy Maher and David Schwartz. Don't forget the special comments from Spud Frawley and Nick Del Sando and Brett Anderson on the boundary, and a bit of Rowan Connolly as well. I'll be back at 4:30, special edition of Finey's Final Siren, just before the Fremantle Geelong game. Catch you then.